ball is life, plain and simple. You know, ask any baller. If you know, you know.
The game has changed, but it's still the same. You want it, go get it.
Shazam!
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line, the shot on Elo.
The Bulls win! They win it!
Mike, you're honestly telling me that you're top five.
Yeah.
Top five of all time.
No question about it.
Booker, this is for the win. Got it. Wow. The ruling on the floor is made basket.
You know, one thing's for sure. Over at Valley Sports Plug, you're never going to catch us slipping.
With the first overall pick, the Phoenix Suns select.
3, 2, 1, yeah!
Welcome to Pass the Outlet, episode number 28. I'm your host, Michael Benjamin, joined as always by my wingman, Chris Patrick. Chris, we are down to the final dance, man. The NBA Finals is here, but how are you doing tonight, my brother?
I'm doing good, Mike. The knees are a little sore. Took a fall over the weekend, but you know that's what happens when you get older and you try and perform at the same level you did in your teenage years. But hey, what can I say? I'm happy to be back with you here on Pass the Outlet talking basketball. Also, you know, I am excited to see two small market teams in the NBA Finals and excited to dive into that as well. But Mike, how are you doing, bro?
I'm doing great, man. Honestly, if you're a true hoop head, this might have been the matchup that we all really should have been wanting. The two best teams since January. I can't wait to see what happens. But of course, this is Pass the Outlet here on Valley Sports Plug Network. If you guys are joining us here live on the playback or listening on podcast streaming services, we love y'all. Make sure you like this video and subscribe to Valley Sports Plug on YouTube. You can also follow us at AZ_VSP on all social medias to keep up to date on the Valley. But Chris, you touched on it today. Of course, we got to look at the 2025 NBA Finals matchup of the Oklahoma City Thunder, the juggernaut from the West, against the fourth-seeded Indiana Pacers with an absolute stellar run through the Eastern Conference. We'll take a look back on the conference finals, obviously. And then for the outlet point guard, we're going to do something a little special. It's going to be this or that as we look at a position breakdown of the starters, and a couple of guys on the bench as well. Then, of course, you know, Chris is going to bring it with Reddit Reacts. So we're going to have some fun today, but this is Valley Sports Plug. We represent the Valley in Arizona, so it would only be right if we start off with the news of the Phoenix Suns, who are currently trying to find their fourth head coach in the last 4 years. And news has come down early this week that we are now down to the final two. Shams Charania, he said, the Phoenix Suns have narrowed their head coaching search to two finalists from the Cleveland Cavaliers, associate head coach Johnny Bryant and assistant Jordan Ott. Sources tell ESPN both will meet with Suns owner Matt Ishbia in Michigan ahead of a hiring as soon as later this week. Chris, I know next week's Heat Check Live was supposed to be all about the Diamondbacks, but I don't know. You and VSP Tallman might have to touch on this, but I got to throw it over to you right off the bat. These two guys, Johnny Bryant and Jordan Ott, what struck you first?
Mike, I mean, my goodness, we have to go with the elephant in the room first and foremost. The thing that's on the front of everybody's mind when this news broke, it's the Michigan State ties of Jordan Ott. I texted you right away and I was like, Mike, they're going to hire Jordan Ott. That's going to be their guy, the Michigan State guy. Of course it is. Now, what's funny is Jordan Ott and Johnny Bryant both come from the Cleveland Cavaliers. The thing is, Johnny Bryant is a little bit further up the bench, closer to the head coach position than Jordan Ott is, has a little bit more experience, a little more notoriety around the league. I'm sure they're both great coaches. Obviously, they made it through several series of interviews with the Suns. But man, if it's not Johnny Bryant, I think it's just so bad optically. Even having Jordan Ott be one of the finalists, I think for me is pretty bad optically. Matt Ishbia is not living in a bubble, I would like to think. He hears the criticisms, he knows it, and he can say as much as he wants. Like, I don't even know if he has said it, but he could say that it has nothing to do with the Michigan State ties. But at the end of the day, like, it's kind of hard to ignore when everyone you're building within your organization comes from the state of Michigan in some form or fashion. I don't know, man. What is Brian Gregory was also a Michigan guy, Michigan State guy. So he's obviously been involved in this process. What's funny, what's kind of funny to me, Mike, is Devin Booker also has Michigan ties, right? So it's like, I don't know. If it works, it works. But I just, you know, I'm a big optics guy. I've talked about it on several podcasts. The optics of hiring someone from Michigan State with all the buzz out there. I mean, the local radio guys did a poll the other day between who you would rather have. And it was like 85 to 15, Johnny Bryant over Jordan Ott. So I think the Valley, if they had their pick of these two candidates, it would be Johnny Bryant. But what do you think, Mike?
Well, I want to touch on the optics part, man, because you really have to sit and look from a fan's perspective, because that's what we are, right? We're not in everyday meetings with these guys. You know, I'm not the right-hand man of Josh Bartlestein. I'm not making decisions for the Phoenix Suns. So we really have to go off of what's put out in front of us. And I do want to look at both of these guys as candidates in regard to the head coaching position. And I'm going to start off with Johnny Bryant. He's a hooper, Chris. He played college ball at San Francisco College for one season before transferring to the University of Utah in 2004-2005. He's the Utah school's career three-point percentage leader at 44%, still holds 20 years later. And then he started as an assistant in 2012 as a player development assistant, and then really got his train rolling as a coach with the Utah Jazz. As an assistant from 2014 to 2020, he was the New York Knicks associate head coach from 2020 to 2024 under Tom Thibodeau, newly fired from the New York Knicks as of today. And then you said last year was the associate head coach for Kenny Atkinson this past season as the Cavaliers won 60 plus games, were the surefire bet, I would have said, to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. But man, he's just also done some awesome things off the floor, man. He created Bryant Sports Academy, working with athletes of all ages. He's worked with former players like Paul Millsap, Damian Lillard. The big one is he was an absolute key catalyst in the development of Donovan Mitchell. Going back to his days in Utah, and you know, Donovan's been one of the best shooting guards in the league ever since he's gone to Cleveland as well. He's just continued to tread upward, I would say. But then we look at Jordan Ott. Graduated from Penn State with the bachelor's in sports management, but then you said it. Graduated from Michigan State with a master's in athletic administration. There's some other weird things that kind of irk me when it comes to Jordan Ott as well, Chris. He was the video coordinator for the Atlanta Hawks from 2013 to 2016. He was a Brooklyn Nets assistant for about six seasons under Kenny Atkinson, Jock Vaughn, and Steve Nash, right? Not the best track record with Steve Nash. Same, 2022 to 2024, Lakers assistant under Darvin Ham. We know that flamed out as well for them, but then spent the last season with Kenny Atkinson. He also is joining the Latvian national team's coaching staff. So when you truly look at it, Chris, both of these guys have qualifications and have been coaches in the league for a long time. But here's the other kicker. This is the last one that I saw from Jordan Ott. He began his career in 2013 as a video coordinator with Atlanta Hawks, and who was the head coach at the time? Mike Budenholzer. So we're literally just coming off of an absolute travesty and situation with Mike Budenholzer at the helm for the Phoenix Suns, and we're going to roll with a guy that started his coaching career with him. Now, semantics, as some people would say. I do think it's kind of almost petty as well how Matt Ishbia is going after two Cavaliers guys. You know, as we know, his major feud that he's had over the past couple of years with Dan Gilbert, as they're both mortgage moguls in the world, man. So it's almost like, is Matt Ishbia, you know, thumbing it in front of his face saying, hey, look, I'm going to take one of your guys. It's interesting that it's come down to these two guys. I think there were some other candidates that I thought were forefront people. I would have said Chris Quinn from the Miami Heat, as well as I believe it was Sean Sweeney from the Dallas Mavericks. But this is the luck of the draw. And we know when people are in power, man, what do they like to do at the end of the day? They like to go with people that they have possible relationships with. But I will give the Phoenix Suns and Brian Gregory the benefit of the doubt, because it does sound like Brian Gregory has been truly professional without this coaching search, asking the right questions. And Chris, the last kicker for me is they've been keeping Devin Booker involved all the way through. And that's what we need to do if we're going to keep our guy Book happy in the Valley for years to come. We'll see. Sounds like it's coming down probably within the next couple of days. But that's kind of my thoughts right now, Chris. Until we know who it is, then I think I can go a little bit more deep dive into how I truly might feel, especially if it goes one way or the other. But I'll pass it over to you if you got any last thoughts on the Suns coaching search.
Yeah, I mean, you covered a lot of stuff, and some stuff I didn't even know. I think it is good that Devin Booker is being involved, as he should. I think that obviously speaks to the organization wanting him to be here for a long time. Sounds like the future is mutual, or the feeling is mutual, and he wants to be here for a long time. So you start your rebuild or your retool or reload, whatever you want to call it, with Devin Booker and whoever this new head coach is going to be. I think the good news is whoever it is, it's not going to be a one-year proposition. The bar has been lowered significantly. We went from thinking we were in a championship window, having gotten KD with Devin Booker, and then bringing in Bradley Beal, and then also had at the earlier, you know, seasons, having Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton as well. But that's kind of all fizzled out. So now you know that this guy has to stick around for at least two, I'd say probably 3 or 4 years, to really give him a fair shake at it, unless it's just disastrous. He loses the locker room, you know, immediately. But you just can't be cycling through coaches this frequently. I mean, you mentioned it. This is going to be their fourth head coach in 4 years. Devin Booker, I think, has played for like 7 or 8 coaches, and he's only been in the league like, this is going to be his 10th season, I think. So it's crazy to think about how much turnover there's been in a job where that you see a lot of stability for head coaches. If you look around the league, like, how long was Greg Popovich the head coach in San Antonio? Steve Kerr in Golden State? Eric Spoelstra in Miami? I mean, guys that are good and successful, and organizations that are good and successful, have the coaches stick around for quite some time. I mean, you did touch on it a little bit. The firing of Tom Thibodeau, I think, was a little surprising to me, because he has the most playoff wins out of any Knicks head coach of the last, I think I read, 16 seasons or something like that. 13 playoff wins, got them to the Eastern Conference Finals with a real talented team. Yes, but, you know, ran into a bit of a, I don't even want to call it a buzzsaw, because they played them pretty well. There were some close games, but there were some pretty big meltdowns that the Knicks had. I don't know. I guess my last thought on the Suns head coaching thing is, no matter who they pick, I want them to do well. Obviously, like you said it, Mike, we're fans. We want them to succeed. I want them to be here for more than 1 year, good, bad, or indifferent. Give them a shake. Let them rebuild. Work with Brian Gregory, whether that's part of their job function or not, and start building this team back, getting back draft capital, and doing the work to build. I hate, it's cliche, I hate when people say it, but building a culture back here in Phoenix, and building a Suns way, or whatever slogan you want to throw out there. We need an identity, and we need some cohesiveness for this team so that everyone can be aligned, Mike. We all have to get in alignment. But I did have a quick question for you on this head coaching subject. Had Tom Thibodeau been available at the start of this coaching search, do you think the Suns should have entertained it, or even would it be too crazy for them to even consider it at this point?
I think you have to keep all your options open, especially as now technically you're one of two teams that are searching for a head coach. But, you know, for the past couple of weeks, it's only been the Phoenix Suns. So you have to do your due diligence, because, Chris, I mean, you said it perfectly. And I'll add on top of it, continuity and culture is what is successful in the NBA. I mean, you've seen it from not even the teams that have won the NBA finals, but the teams that are consistently making pushes every year. You look at the two teams that we have matched up this year with OKC and Indiana. I mean, these guys have been together for a number of years, sprinkling in some much needed pieces, obviously. But then you think back to last year. I mean, the Boston Celtics have been in a groove for the past couple of seasons. The season before, the Denver Nuggets, with the core of Nikola Jokic, Aaron Gordon, and Jamal Murray. You know, those guys have been together for a long time. So I think the good thing about the Phoenix Suns and where they sit right now is, what are the true expectations of next year and possibly the next couple of years? Trying to put the pieces back together. So when and if we aren't successful next season, you can almost kind of have a scapegoat, knowing that this is what you have to do to get back on the right road to building a winning culture. So at the end of the day, the Suns need to get this right, but you know, they're going to have some wiggle room to start growing with their guys. So we will keep an eye out for what's happening. But Chris, I love that you brought up Tom Thibodeau. That was the shocker of today. And I did want to kind of touch on what happened in the conference finals. So first, we'll start off in the Western Conference. I mean, I think the Thunder did what they had to do, right? They handled business in home, at home in both game one and game two, 114-88 and 118-103. Then the classic, I would say classic because it seems to happen almost every series for some teams, unfortunately. They just fell asleep. They didn't show up in game three as they get blasted by 42 points. But then great teams find a way to rally. You had clutch threes down the stretch by Jalen Williams, and they hold off the Wolves in game four as Ant and Randall kind of struggled, man. And they struggled the last two games. And that's where you saw that 30-point blowout in game five as the Thunder seal up the Western Conference Finals. Obviously, we know SGA, the season MVP, was named Western Conference Finals MVP, averaged 31.4 points, 8.2 assists, and 5.3 rebounds. But Chris, I would be remiss if I wouldn't say that the Eastern Conference Finals, I think for a lot of people, was a little bit of a shocker. And obviously the shock came in game one after they came back down 14 with less than 3 minutes. We obviously have the famous shot, Tyrese Halliburton thinking that he hit the three to win the game, doing the old Reggie Miller choke sign. I don't know how some people think about that, but I always love nods back to your team's greats. So Tyrese Halliburton is a historian, if you ask me. And then they stole game two, right? Just stabbing Knicks fans right in the heart. I did think it made sense for them to, for the Knicks to rally in game three as they won 106-100, but too much momentum, too much juice in the building. Pacers take game four, 130-121, taking a 3-1 series lead back to the Mecca, where the Knicks stay alive, 111-94. Tyrese Halliburton has his worst game probably of the postseason with only 8 points. But I think if anybody was putting money down, you had to put your money on the Pacers going back to Indiana in game six. Just absolutely cemented a stellar Eastern Conference run in front of a rowdy crowd, 125-108. That's high level. But Chris, I want to pass it over to you if you have any deep thoughts, any sprinkled in opinions on what you saw in the conference finals, because, you know, they didn't go the distance, but I thought, for the most part, both of them were pretty entertaining. Definitely, I would lean more towards the Eastern Conference Finals as the most entertaining one, though.
I would absolutely agree. The Eastern Conference Finals for me was far more entertaining, and I think provided a higher level of intrigue too. I think a lot of people, I don't want to say knew, but they, at the end of the day, they kind of knew that the Thunder were the superior team over the Timberwolves. In the East, a lot of people, I don't want to say it was the conventional thinking, but a lot of people, I believe, thought the Knicks were better than the Pacers and that the Pacers had been overachieving up to that point. But you don't just stumble your way into the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years straight. This is obviously a really good Pacers team. And yeah, they did get a little bit of a break with the Cavaliers. That team was banged up, but that's the NBA playoffs, man. I mean, this whole playoff started in the middle of April, and we're now at the beginning of June, just starting the NBA finals. It's truly a gauntlet, and I think only second maybe to only the NHL playoffs as far as professional sports goes and how I think grueling of a grind it can be. So, you know, I heard, I don't remember who it was. I think Draymond Green, after the Warriors got eliminated, basically say something. A reporter asked him if he thought they would have beaten the beaten the Timberwolves had Steph Curry not gotten injured. And he's like, you know, I can sit here and say, yeah, but we never know. Like, the Timberwolves are a good team. Like, would we have still won if KD was injured? Or he was drawing a comparison to some other previous playoffs. So that's just kind of the way it goes. But man, I do think that the way the Pacers played the Knicks was brilliant, man. They're truly the comeback kids. They've had so many exciting comebacks. That game one of the Eastern Conference Finals was an instant classic. And you said it, like Tyrese Haliburton truly, you know, embracing being a member of the Indiana Pacers and knowing their history, the nod to Reggie Miller, who was in the building during that game, if I'm not mistaken. You know, he loved that. It's hard to not root for the Pacers. There's really nothing that you can say, you know, you don't like them for. I know some people don't like Tyrese Haliburton, but if there's nothing else throughout this playoff run and the conference finals, the memes have been immaculate. I mean, what you got the Halle ban and the what's the one they're throwing out there for Shea? Shea's got one.
Oh man, I know they were saying Pascal Siakam was the Somali pirate.
That's right. That might have been what I was thinking of. Yeah.
But I mean, there was one for Shea as well. I can't remember exactly what it was.
I'll see if I can find it. But I don't want to keep talking only about the Eastern Conference Finals, but for me, I paid a little bit closer attention to it because aside from game three, where the Thunder just kind of threw in the towel a little early, and I think they just kind of had a mindset of like, you know, we've been grinding through this playoffs, we had a bad start to this game, let's just throw it away and come back fresh in the next game. And game four was close. You see, there is just a 2-point win. That one was a grind, but they found their rhythm again in game five, able to close out the series strong and in convincing fashion by 30 points. And I think that just kind of told the whole story of how that series went.
Yeah. I mean, 3 out of 4 double-digit wins is going to get you where you need to go. And winning the way that they did in game four on the road as well, getting clutch buckets from Jalen Williams, didn't have to be your main guy. I think it shows a testament to where this team is going and where how the core has been built, right? How you can rely on multiple guys. Chris, we still got to give props, even if we don't want to, especially as Suns fans after getting swept by the Minnesota Timberwolves last year. Anthony Edwards might be slowly and quietly solidifying himself as the best shooting guard in the NBA. And it hurts me to say, because we know we got our guy Devin Booker. But you can't go back-to-back Western Conference Finals appearances and not start adding your name into that upper echelon of shooting guards. But now the true test is him getting over the hump and getting his team to the finals. Can he do that with the current cast of characters in Minnesota? I truly don't know. I think it is a true testament once again to them, though, because you took out such a key piece to what you had last year in Karl Anthony Towns and switched it over to the Eastern Conference. Julius Randle is a different type of player, and you know you get a little bit, you take some steps down defensively with Julius Randle. You still have Rudy Gobert in the middle, but for what Ant did, especially how they started the season and how they were really kind of wavering, it seemed like, towards the end, and then they got on the run that they needed, it was impressive, man. And I honestly, I know it's another Western Conference team that you always have to keep an eye on, but I'm about success in the league. So Anthony Edwards is up and coming to be one of the top five guys in this league, and it's coming quick. But I got to touch on the losers in the East as well. The New York Knicks, man, they've truly let me down. And I think that was really because of the pace that the Pacers play at. It's consistent pushing. They have good size. They have guys who can stretch the floor at their 4 and 5 positions as well. And we're going to get into that really shortly. But the New York Knicks, man, they want to play that half court, you know, offense, slow it down, let Jalen Brunson kind of get into his dribble moves into the middle of the floor and almost kind of not foul bait, but, you know, create those opportunities to get inside and get to the free throw line as well. And when you're consistently out on the run trying to keep that pace, it's really, really hard to keep up consistently. But the Knicks dropping game one, it almost was like a nail in the coffin. All of their momentum that they had was gone, and it was truly tough to see. And I am disappointed with them because I'm going to be in New York at the end of next week, and I would have been there if they would have made the finals. I would have been there during game four. That would have been an incredible atmosphere to be around. Would I have been in Madison Square Garden? Let's be real, folks. I don't know if I'm ready to drop $5,000 on an NBA Finals ticket for a team that I don't support, especially as I went to game one and game two of the Suns Finals in 2021. But that's just would have been something special to experience. And then the last thing I'll say too, Chris, when you talk about Tom Thibodeau, this is a tale as old as time, man. He does not go deep enough. He runs his guys ragged throughout the entire season. Multiple guys play 42, 44 minutes a game. And then when it comes down to the end of the season, they don't have enough gas. And that's all we've ever seen from Tom Thibodeau coach teams. So I don't think it was right for him to be fired by the New York Knicks, especially after the success that they've had over the past couple of seasons. But I think, you know, they've kind of tapped the keg and they kind of got what they could get out of Tom Thibodeau. So now it's time to move on and see who can lead them to the promised land. But long story short, Chris, I think for NBA fans, you might not be happy with what we're getting, but this might be the best matchup that we honestly could have asked for, because these are the two best teams, like I said, since January. Chris, I got a bunch of stats, but I want to throw it over to you first. NBA Finals 2025, game one is on Thursday, June 5th, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. That means it's 5:30 p.m. for us here in Arizona. High level, man, what are you looking forward to in this series of OKC versus Indiana?
Man, I am just looking forward to some hard-nosed basketball and some high-caliber offenses. You might have it in your stats here, and luckily I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I know both of these teams have been the highest-scoring teams through the playoffs. I think I had heard that the Pacers have been averaging like 117 points a game through the playoffs, so both of these teams can fill it up offensively. I think OKC plays a little bit better defense, but the Pacers are a little deeper, so it's a very intriguing matchup. I know a lot of people in these bigger markets are going to point to the television numbers that are probably going to be lower than they have been in years past, when, you know, the Boston Celtics or whoever are in the finals. But I don't care about TV ratings, Mike. I care about watching good basketball, and I expect that we'll get some good basketball. And I know we'll probably get to our predictions, so I'm not going to give it all away yet, but I think I would expect this to go six or seven games. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
I don't either. These are the two clear-cut best teams in the NBA right now, right? Because if you think about it, man, the Indiana Pacers, they started off real slow this season. I think, you know, Tyrese Haliburton was dealing with some injuries. I believe Nembhard or Nesmith were dealing with injuries to start the season as well. I think they started 10 and 15. But yeah, I mean, let's look at OKC real quick. Like we said, the best two teams since January 1st. OKC was 53 and 13. Indiana was 46 and 18. But the Thunder, I mean, set a franchise record this year, 68 and 14. Their previous record was 60 and 22 in 2012-2013. Which was the season after they reached the finals, where they lost 4-1 to the Miami Heat. But you're talking about two teams that have never won a championship. Well, okay, yes, you can talk about the franchise of OKC. The Seattle Supersonics won in 1979, but the city of Oklahoma City has not tasted that championship just yet. But OKC got here. They beat the 8-seed Grizzlies 4-0. They had to go up against a gauntlet of a Nuggets team, took them to the limit, won that series 4-3, and then obviously beat the Timberwolves 4-1. Yeah, Chris, two of the top best scoring teams in the playoffs, third for OKC at 117.1. But then there's a lot of fourths for OKC. They were fourth in field goal percentage, fourth in rebounds, fourth in points allowed, and fourth to last in three-point percentage. Only 33.6%, but OKC, they do it at so many different levels, man. Attacking the basket, playing big with Hartenstein and Chet. I mean, that's why this team seems to be unstoppable right now. But the Pacers, another team that has never won a championship. Do you know the last time they went to the finals, Chris? Here's a little bit of trivia for you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, throwback to last Tuesday when we had our trivia stream. That's an interesting one, because I want to say I don't think Reggie Miller ever made it to the finals. Maybe he did. Okay, I'm going to say, oh God, I'm going to say 99.
So technically you would probably be right because it was the 1999-2000 season. Okay. So it was the 2000 finals, went up against Kobe, Shaq, and the Lakers. They did push him to six, so respectable, especially since that was during the three-peat era of that Los Angeles Knicks, Los Angeles Lakers team. But Pacers were the fourth seed, man. They beat up on the Bucks 4-1. They beat up on the Cavs 4-1. Then they beat up on the Knicks 4-2. I mean, two of the top three seeds in the Eastern Conference going down, it seemed pretty easily at the hands of the Pacers. And yeah, second in scoring, 117.4 points per game. Second in field goal percentage in the playoffs, 49.7%. But here's the big one. First in three-point percentage. They are shooting 40.1% from deep. Wow. It's remarkable the pace that both of these teams play because we're going to get into it once again. There's a lot of young legs out there for both of these squads. But it is true homegrown talent, it seems like, or guys that they pinpointed early and brought in. You could talk about Tyrese Halliburton, only got 1 year with the Sacramento Kings, then is blossoming into a superstar in his role in Indiana, taking a previous championship winner with Pascal Siakam, bringing him in to be a key piece for this Pacers unit. You can almost talk about guys like Alex Caruso with his championship DNA as well, even though it is the Phantom, the Asterix bubble championship with the Los Angeles Lakers. These teams are ready to go. They're ready to bring a championship, the first one ever, to their cities. But Chris, we're going to do something a little bit different today. We're still doing the outlet point guard, but we're not looking at clips. We are going to do a position player by player deep dive here and looking at every guy. We got the starting five: point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, and center. And then we'll look at a few guys from the bench. So I do want to save the best for last. So we're not going to start with the point guard position. But I think it's only right that we do start with the shooting guard, Chris, because if you think about it, the Valley Zone, Oklahoma City Thunder, Lu Dort is one of these guys here. And there's a lot of Valley ties in this series, which is awesome for us as well. But Lu Dort, you know, just been a catalyst, I think, for this OKC team for a number of years. His sixth season from Arizona State. I actually saw some clips from his time at ASU today, Chris. Talk about some bounce from this kid. But he also has always had that sky shot, that like rainbow, way high arcing shot, man. It's awesome to see. And then another up-and-coming guy, and Andrew Nembhard, man. Third season from Gonzaga. He actually was a teammate with Chet Holmgren in his one season over there. But he has a really nice change of pace when he attacks the basket, and he gets big for a smaller guy. He has this awesome kind of shoulder dive charge to create the space and get to the basket when he needs to. But Chris, we'll start it off. This is this or that. Who are you going with in this position, shooting guard? You going with Lu Dort or you going with Andrew Nembhard?
Oh, Mike, this is, I'm glad that we didn't start with the point guards, because you didn't tell me that before we dove into that. And I was a little worried because that's like the premier matchup there. But between Lu Dort and Andrew Nembhard, taking my personal biases of loving Lu Dort, the Arizona State Sun Devil alumni, this is tough. Both of these guys are really strong defenders. Lu Dort has a great story of I think he was undrafted, if not like a second rounder. He wasn't a very highly touted NBA prospect and has really built a career. Both these guys are pretty young, I think in their mid-20s, right around there. And I don't think their stats here tell the full story. Nembhard, you know, 12.8 points a game, but he's not always called upon to be a strong scorer. But one benefit of Nembhard is that he's also pretty good with the ball in his hands, which kind of helps Halliburton get his points sometimes, because Nembhard can distribute. You see the 5.1 assists there. It's tough. I think Dort is probably the superior defender. He plays really hard, really physical. But I think if I had to pick, we are playing this or that. Nembhard is the more versatile player. He's going to be more of a two-way player, if you will. And that's not taking anything away from Dort, because he does, I believe, shoot about 40% from the three-point line on a team that is not as a whole shooting the three very well. But Lu Dort himself, you mentioned his pretty smooth jump shot there. But yeah, I've cat's out of the bag. I'm going to go with Andrew Nembhard for this one.
I love it. I feel like most of these we will probably be aligned, Chris, but let's start it off. I'm going the other side. I'm going with Lu Dort. Let's call it a Valley bias. Why not? I think his versatility on the defensive end is what catapults him above Andrew Nembhard for me. Man, there's going to be times where Lu Dort is going to have to guard Tyrese Haliburton, because Haliburton is that taller frame at 6'4". I mean, SGA is no slouch. I mean, he led the league pretty much last year, I believe, in steals. You know, he's going to be able to, you know, make it tough for Tyrese Haliburton as well. But that's why I love the interchangeability and having that different type of guy with Lu Dort, who can get a little bit more physical when he wants to. And it's almost kind of like that guy where if you need to kind of create a foul or get an aggressive play or get a little bit dirty, you can count on him. And those guys are the intangible guys. So we are not aligned to start. I'm going with Lu Dort. Chris going with Andrew Nembhard. But it's time to go to the small forward position. I like this one, man. I like this matchup a lot, because you're talking about the first-time All-Star Jalen Williams here. Oh, man, what a season for him. Third season from Santa Clara. Steve Nash, his own, man. 20.4 points, 5.8 rebounds, 5.3 assists. I will say for the folks watching at home as well, these stats are from their playoffs right now, right? And the crazy thing about it, too, is both teams have played 16 playoff games. Each of their series ended up a little bit different each time because the Thunder swept the Grizzlies, but these are off of 16 games in the 2025 playoffs. And then you got, some are calling the unsung hero, especially in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, in Aaron Nesmith, man. Fifth season from Vanderbilt. Just the Pacers don't win game one if Aaron Nesmith doesn't hit his 4 or 5 three-pointers down the stretch in the last 5 minutes of that game. 14.1 points, 5.6 rebounds. Less than a turnover a game. I love to see that. And you will see, you know, outside of the true high profile guys, you know, less minutes for Aaron Nesmith at 28.8 minutes per game comparative to Jalen Williams, because the Pacers are notorious for going deep in their bench. Rick Carlisle loves to run a 10-man rotation. And if you got a solid 10 guys, man, it only is a benefit for you, especially in the gauntlet of the NBA playoffs. But Chris, Jalen Williams or Aaron Nesmith? This or that? What do you got?
Oh, man. Again, two up-and-coming players. I mean, Jalen Williams, I'll get to him. But Aaron Nesmith is like you kind of touched on it, you know, a 3-and-D guy. Again, another – I hate to call him a role player, but him and Nembhard are pretty much role players in that they aren't going to be – necessarily called upon to be high volume scorers day in and day out, but they're capable of making the shots when called upon. Nesmith is a pretty well-rounded player. You see in the playoffs here, those rebounding numbers, but the defense and his wingspan, I think, is what sets him apart. But I really want to talk about Jalen Williams, man. When you think about the Oklahoma City Thunder, you think about SGA and Chet Holmgren, but Jalen Williams is really the unsung hero. And Mike, you might not know this. I actually just learned it myself. Jalen Williams was the second highest rated player on the Oklahoma City Thunder in NBA 2K25 with an 89 overall rating. Mentioned his all-star bid. This kid is up and coming, and I honestly really love his game. I love watching him play, and he can go off for 30, 35 points. He's any given night. I won't want to call him a walking triple-double, but he can give you a triple-double if he really needs to. And if SGA or Chet are having a down night, he can fill in the spaces in between and really be a big part of this team. And I think he flies under the radar a lot because his game is just so smooth. And it's almost like it reminds me of when years and years and years ago, we were watching Markelle Fultz at Washington play ASU. And you know, as watching the game, it wasn't the most stylish buckets, but we look up and he had like 25, 30 points. We're like, wait, how did that happen? Jalen Williams, it kind of reminds me of that in a lot of ways. He just head down, plays the game well, and puts the stats up. And, you know, 34.6 minutes a game kind of tells you that he's a big part of this team and they rely on him. So I think for this or that, definitely Jalen Williams for me.
You know, Chris, I like Aaron Nesmith a lot. I think he's played himself into a nice contract coming up in the next couple of years. You know, younger guy like you talked about as well. I wonder if he gets a true opportunity. You know, if he does move off of the Pacers in the future, could he be a guy that could be, you know, considered a top two guy for a franchise? I think there's room for him to grow there. But Jalen Williams is already there. And in season three, I mean, he had his coming out party last season. And then this season, I thought he honestly he could have been the most improved player this year over Dyson Daniels of the Atlanta Hawks. But he had his true step on the page, look at me now moment in game four against the Minnesota Timberwolves, where time after time down the stretch, he made clutch threes, clutch buckets, and shored up the defensive side of the basketball for the Oklahoma City Thunder. This guy has already arrived. He was the first time All-Star this year as well. And I think there's just so much room for him to grow. He's the perfect Robin to SGA's Batman right now. And I think within the next couple of years as well, he's going to be one of those guys that you'll look at to see if he does stick with OKC, because they're going to have to pay a whole bunch of people, Chris. We know this. But he's a guy who could go somewhere in the future and be an absolute NBA All-Star and altering for some other franchise in the future. So I'm with you. Jalen Williams, think that has to be it. But this is another tasty matchup, Chris. This one's real tasty. You got the power forward position in Chet Holmgren, where technically it's his, what, second season out of Gonzaga? He was drafted in 2022, but we know he missed his entire first full season because of injury. Just now you have to consistently keep him in all defensive NBA talks, man. I mean, he averages 2+ blocks during the season. This postseason, he averaged 2 blocks. But he's been great when they've asked for him to really contribute. 16.4 points, 8.6 rebounds. We talked about it on one of the other Pass the Outlets. He did kind of have some brain farts against the Denver Nuggets, but overall has had an incredible postseason. It's been awesome to see from him. But then some would say, what, old reliable Pascal Siakam, 9th season from New Mexico State, over 20 points, about 6 rebounds, only 1 turnover a game in 34 minutes. These are the guys that change the futures of franchises, man. When the Indiana Pacers traded for Pascal Siakam midway last year, I think people underrated what Pascal Siakam was truly going to be able to do. Because when you think back on that Toronto Raptors championship team, most people just think about Kawhi Leonard, right? What he did coming in one season and changing the stars and the first championship for that city in Toronto. But you have to remember Fred VanVleet. You have to remember Pascal Siakam from those teams. He is a winner, man. And he's had an incredible, incredible postseason, which led to him winning the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, which in itself might be we'll see. I think some people had thoughts about that. But Chris, this or that, Chet Holmgren or Pascal Siakam?
Mike, this one might be one of the tougher ones, if not the toughest one to pick, because I like both of these guys. And I don't know if I've disclosed this on a podcast yet, but in private, I've showed you my never bet again list. And earlier in the season, Pascal Siakam found his way onto that list. But I'm going to take my personal wagering biases out of this, because I think Pascal Siakam, bets aside, is a guy that has really grown on me. I mean, 43, such an unconventional number to wear on a jersey. And it's something that I think kind of embodies his game. He's a unique guy. This matchup with him and Holmgren is very, very interesting, because yes, Chet has, I think, about 4 inches on him, but Pascal Siakam's got about like 25, 30 pounds of muscle on Chet. So these guys are very different styles of players. Chet relies on his length. Obviously, I think he stands about 7'7", 7'1". His wingspan's probably up there as well, around 7'5", 7'6". And that is just an amount of size I can't even fathom. And you rarely see out in the wild outside of a professional sports setting. Chet Holmgren, man, I think he's young and I think he's shown a lot of promise, but you did mention some of his brain fart moments. And I do worry about him being on such a big stage as the NBA Finals, if he's going to retract a little bit, maybe second guess himself. Whereas Pascal Siakam has been to the top of the mountain. He's won an NBA Finals that you mentioned with Toronto. Now, he did get to take a little bit of a backseat there to Kawhi Leonard. But honestly, I think he's got a little bit of that luxury here as well, with Tyrese Halliburton stealing a lot of the spotlight. But as we had seen, what, Pascal Siakam, Eastern Conference Finals MVP. So maybe not as outside of the spotlight as you might think. But both of these guys are very heavily relied upon for their team, both playing very different styles of game. Pascal Siakam has been known to struggle from the three-point line, but Mike, he's a power forward. You don't really need him out on the perimeter. I just wonder if his ability to finish at the rim is going to be impaired, having Chet Holmgren in there with his large frame, you know, getting in his path. So this is tough for me. I think it's really, really, really close. But for me, I think I would have to go with the guy with more experience and more muscle, and that's going to be Pascal Siakam for me.
Yeah, Chris, and I'll keep it short and sweet. Chet Holmgren has a whole bunch of promise to be a great player in the NBA, but he is very young. Like we said, technically second season. I'm going with the more polished individual in Pascal Siakam and his incredible run that he's had, which led to his Eastern Conference Finals MVP. I mean, like we said, what, there was the kind of discussions in regard to should it have been Halliburton. I mean, Halliburton had 21 points, 10.5 assists, and 6 rebounds average in that 6-game series against the Knicks. But Pascal Siakam was more consistent throughout. 24.8 points, 5 rebounds, 3.5 assists. Shot better. You are right. He is a little bit notorious for not shooting the greatest from outside, but he was more consistent, it seemed like, within that Eastern Conference Finals. So I just got to go with the proven commodity right now. Not saying that Chet's not proven, but he is still young, man. He still has a lot of growth to go in his game. So, Chris, we are aligned, but we're looking at the final big man position, the center spot. This one's kind of interesting, right? You're talking about Isaiah Hartenstein. I didn't know this, Chris. Apparently, he never went to college. He played professionally in Europe before he was drafted in the NBA. This really? Is his, yeah, I did not know this.
I didn't know that.
But this is his 7th season. Famously, obviously, he had a great stint for the New York Knicks the past 2 seasons, which led to his big contract that he got with the Oklahoma City Thunder. But then Miles Turner, man, it's crazy to look at some of these guys. You think of Cat, you think of D'Angelo Russell, Devin Booker, just you loop those 3 guys in because they're friends. But this is Miles Turner's 10th NBA season. He's already a double-digit veteran in the league. 15.2 points, 4.9 rebounds, 2.3 blocks, a stellar big man in the middle who can shoot from the outside as well and who has a crazy Lego collection. But that's beside the point, Chris. Isaiah Hartenstein is the glue guy, right? He's a big man who needs to get boards. He gives them second chance opportunities. I think he's been great for the Thunder this postseason and this entire season as well. But, Chris, this or that, Isaiah Hartenstein or Miles Turner?
Oh, Mike, we're talking about a one-time could-be son in Miles Turner had we made the move to unload DeAndre Ayton in that swap. And wow, it's interesting to think about how, you know, if you're into the sci-fi thing, how different timelines or universes or dimensions, however you want to look at it, could play out had that trade have occurred. Could we be seeing DeAndre Ayton in the finals right now? I don't know. But we're playing this or that. Miles Turner, Isaiah Hartenstein. With Isaiah Hartenstein, I mean, or Hartenstein? Hartenstein. I guess maybe depends on where you're at, right?
Since he's European, it's probably Hartenstein.
Stein, yeah. I think you mentioned he played. I looked it up real quick. He played professionally in Germany prior to coming to the NBA, so it's probably Hartenstein. But he's with SGA, Jalen Williams, and Chet Holmgren shouldering the brunt of the scoring. Hartenstein is really just in there to grab boards and play defense, man. That's pretty much all he's called upon to do, and he does it pretty well. I mean, for a 7-footer, he's not as scrawny as Chet, so I think that's why he plays the center over Chet. Chet also has a lighter touch, a little bit of a better shooter. But as you can see, 23.9 minutes, so I know there are times when they drop Chet to the center spot and play, if you want to call it small ball, with a 7-footer out there. That's what they do. So I think from an impact standpoint, Miles Turner is definitely more of a contributor for the Indiana Pacers. Both of these guys are able to play defense, but I think Turner has the edge as far as being a little bit more aggressive in his defense. You see the higher block numbers through the playoffs. Anyway, without droning on too much and getting into the nitty gritty and maybe talking too much, I'm going to say this or that, Miles Turner for me.
This or that, Miles Turner for me as well. I just think the ability for him to stretch the floor is going to get Isaiah Hartenstein a little bit uncomfortable. You're going to get him out of the paint, having to chase a little bit. Not to say that he can't, but when you have those outside shooters from the big men position, it can get things in flux. And it's going to be the same for Chet as well, because he's going to have to stretch out on Pascal. And that opens up the floor for other guys to attack and drive. But Miles Turner, man, 10-year pro. I am absolutely going with him. I think he's been a consistent big man in this league for the past 5 seasons, and it's awesome to see the success that he continues to have and continues to grow. Props to him. All right, we're not there yet. All right, we got to go over the bench, Chris, and I got 3 specific guys from each team. Let's start with OKC and the old man of the group, Alex Caruso. He is literally the oldest player on the team at 31 years old. It's his 8th season from Texas A&M. He's that intangible guy, Chris. You know it. You love to have these kind of guys on your team. 8.8 points, 2.5 assists, 1.8 steals in about 23 minutes per game, shooting 42% from 3 this postseason, man. Then you got some young cats, man. Cason Wallace, his 2nd season out of Kentucky. He has great speed to the basket, man. He's very useful. You just touched on it. When they take Hartenstein out and they move Chet to the 5, Cason Wallace normally comes in at that 2 spot. He is very useful when they go small ball. But 5.4 points in 22.4 minutes. And then the one guy I'd say who isn't getting as much of the starlight in regard to the bench, but he is one of their key contributors, is Aaron Wiggins, his 4th year from Maryland. He was crucial in game 2 and game 4 wins against the Nuggets, which helped turn the tide of that series when things could have got really far away from the Thunder. And he could be a starter on most NBA teams, man. 6.1 points so far this postseason on 40.7% from the field. But got to touch on Indiana real quick. Obi Toppin, the New York Knicks cast off. He is just the athleticism boost that any team would want off the bench. Obviously, he's a previous dunk contestant participant, but he's been solid for them in the postseason. 8.7 points, 3.3 rebounds in 17 minutes. And then, Chris, we got 2 University of Arizona Wildcats. What? Benedict Mathurin, his 3rd season, 10.4 points per game in only 16 minutes. Man, I think about his game 4 performance against the Knicks, where in only 12 minutes, scored 20 points, man. Insane, just a flamethrower. He is struggling from outside right now, 28% from 3, but he's scorching from everywhere else. The flamethrower, shooting 48.4% overall. And then the old man that I think a lot of Phoenix Suns fans at once hoped would join the squad in TJ McConnell. Another one of these double-digit guys, 10th season from Arizona. I think a lot of people would have said once he joined the league, would he make it 10 years? There's no shot. But consistency is key. He has played over 70 games in 8 of his 10 seasons, Chris. And one of those seasons that he didn't hit that benchmark, 69 games. 8.4 points, 3.9 assists in 16.3 minutes, shooting 52.8% from the field. He picks his spots. He is an absolutely stellar, smart player. For being undersized the way that he is a true difference maker for this Indiana Pacers bench. But Chris, this or that, Oklahoma City or Indiana?
I find this so interesting, Mike. Both teams have the unsuspecting white guard coming off the bench in Alex Caruso and TJ McConnell. I love TJ McConnell, man. Pittsburgh guy. Went to Duquesne, transferred to the University of Arizona. Plays a guard position, plays hard. I mean, on the other side, Alex Caruso has an asterisk championship. He's very unsuspecting. Like, you wouldn't expect him to be as athletic as he is, but dude can get up. I've seen Caruso slam it down, and it kind of takes you back a little bit. I do think that the Pacers bench is quite a bit deeper than the Thunder bench, and I don't know if that's more of a coaching decision versus a talent decision. It seems like OKC has been going with more of a seven-man rotation, and you know, during blowouts or big stretches, the other bench guys outside of the Case and Wallace, right, and Alex Caruso, the other guys are all getting less than 10 minutes, whereas Caruso and Wallace are getting Wallace, I thought I was getting his last name wrong for a second, are getting like 20 plus minutes. But I do love the contributions of Alex Caruso, having that veteran leadership and bringing that championship pedigree. You know, he knows he was in that locker room. He knows what it takes. I know it was a comedy, Mike, but it reminds me of Ed Monix in it's not Tropic Thunder. What is it? Help me out here. The movie with Will Ferrell, the semi-pro. Sorry. Yeah. Semi-pro.
Oh God.
Where they roast him because he talks about having a ring and he's going to teach these guys how to play basketball, right? And they're like, well, you were on the Andre 3000 was like, you're on the bench the whole time. You didn't do anything. And he was like, I was practicing with them every day. I pushed them to their limit. I was a part of that team. I deserve this ring. And that kind of reminds me of Caruso, but he's actually playing and he's actually contributing. And when people talk about the tough defense the Thunder are playing, the two guys in that conversation are Lu Dort and Alex Caruso, bordering on criminal, might I say. Some people think that they're getting away with a little more than they should on the defensive end, but that playing hard defense, I think, to some extent is all about, you know, pushing the envelope a little bit, pushing your limits, finding out what you can get away with, and understanding what you can get away with as well, because every official has a different level of tolerance. I like what Cason Wallace does off the bench. It seems like he's a tough kid who knows what role he has to play when he's on the court and provides some relief. And you're right, Aaron Wiggins, man, he's had a couple games where he's come in and shown what he can do. I just think he hasn't really gotten quite the shake at it. On the other side, just to talk about these other guys, I mean, Benedict Mathurin is again, he kind of reminds me of, the same way Nembhard plays a little bit, where he's a kind of a 3-and-D guy a little bit. He can attack the rim. Obi Toppin. Aggressive, physical guy, can finish at the rim, can play tough defense. So I lean more towards the Indiana Pacers bench, mostly just due to their depth and how they're utilized. So with this and that, I am gonna go with Indiana, because I think Oklahoma City relies on their starters more.
Chris, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what it is. The depth of the Indiana Pacers, the way that they play, the positions that they really can step in for. TJ McConnell can run your offense. Obi Toppin has really flourished and expanded his game outside of just being a high flyer. And then Benedict Mathurin is that guy that you can rely on to get a basket when you need to and create his own shot, man. You need to have those guys on the bench, and you're going 10 deep. It's we're not calling the Thunder guys slouches. They wouldn't be where they are without them. But for what Indiana's bench does, it has to go to them, man. This or that, it's got to be the Indiana Pacers. But now's the time, Chris. It's the big kahuna. It's the point guard matchup, the one that everyone will be keeping an eye on in the 2025 NBA Finals. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the MVP this postseason, 29.8 points, 6.9 assists, 5.7 rebounds in 36.5 minutes per game. going up against Tyrese Haliburton, the up-and-coming superstar, the most overrated voted by his peers. I think he said overrate that. I think it's hard to do that now. And some would have said he should have been the Eastern Conference Finals MVP as well. 18.1 points, 9.8 assists, 5.7 rebounds in 35.1 minutes per game. Chris, I think a lot of people or some people or no, I'll say a lot of people would probably say this is an easy one to go towards and you're leaning towards SGA, especially coming off of an MVP season. But what are you thinking in this matchup, this or that, SGA or Tyrese? What are you thinking?
It seems like it comes down to overrated versus overhated. A lot of people are hopping on the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander foul baiter bandwagon, if you will. And I will admit, I was on that train for a little bit. It's funny. It's funny to see the memes and see the clips where he's kind of flailing a little bit. But then you got to remind yourself that a lot of guys in this league do that. They call LeBron James LaFlop. He's kind of known, you know, to sell. But it's just a common thing. And not necessarily speaking from experience, but I don't think it's anything SGA is having in his head where he's like, I'm going to go in here, I'm going to force the contact, and then I'm going to flail. I think he just sells the contact naturally, and he finishes. I mean, he does get finished through the contact, and a lot of people have made, you know, I hate to do it again, it's overdone, but the Kobe Bryant comparisons, where Kobe was kind of known for finishing through contact as well. And, you know, it's been on display, I think, more through the playoffs because of how much exposure the Thunder are getting through this playoff run. But I do like Shai's game. I mean, you can't deny him, man. He's the league MVP for a reason. Has incredible ability to score and finish at the rim. 30 plus points basically all season. You can pretty much always rely on him. I think for me as a point guard, I'd like to see his assist numbers be a little bit higher, but when you're the main guy on your team scoring the points, I guess you don't really need to pass the ball that much. Tyrese Haliburton, on the other hand, though, I do really like his game. He had that huge game 7 where he basically, like, or it was game 6, I can't remember, where he had like 15 plus assists or something like that. I could be getting the numbers wrong, but it just shows you how versatile he is. He did have a couple games where his scoring kind of was a little bit lower than expected, but he always bounces back. It doesn't seem like he hangs his head. He's a great passer and almost I hate to say a pure point guard, but love Haliburton's game. And I think he's really been playing with a severe chip on his shoulder. It is funny. You mentioned a lot of people thought he was going to be the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. I think he even thought that he was going to be the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. If you go on X or Instagram, you can probably find the clip of him pulling what people call the Drewski meme, where he's going up, like when they're announcing it, he's like getting ready to walk up and then they say Pascal Siakam, and he's like worming back. So I don't know. I love the guy. I think he's been great in his post game interviews as well. This one's tough, man. This is nearly impossible. This or that. And so is this like, I guess I shouldn't be asking. Okay. I'm just going to say it. Give me Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, man. How can you deny the MVP?
He is the MVP for a reason, Chris. The truth of the matter for both these guys is they are the engines that make both of these teams go, right? This is always a tough scenario when you're looking at a head-to-head matchup in the same position for the best player on both team, or the most important, if you want to say that as well. Tyrese Haliburton, man, if he doesn't involve everybody and also contribute on the offensive end, this team is not where it is without him. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the reason why I give him the nod in this or that is because of the true consistency that he has shown on the offensive end the entire season and the entire postseason. The reason that you don't get that Tyrese Haliburton honestly falls down a couple of notches is that game 5 performance in the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, at the end of the day, it is a moot point because they won the series. But have we seen SGA have anything less than 25 points a game? 7 plus assists, 5 plus rebounds, you know, a steal or two as well. He is the true catalyst for the Oklahoma City Thunder. He is the best player on the floor anytime that he is on the floor. And he has shown that over the past couple of seasons. And the other reason why I give him the nod as well, Chris, I know you talk and we make fun about how you have your list of non-betting guys. And SGA has been on them, been on that recently. SGA was my pick to win MVP this year. So he is on my betting list. And he came through in the clutch for me. So I think this one is easier, like I said, than some people would have thought. But the way that Tyrese Haliburton continues to become an upper echelon player in this league, you have to start talking about him in, you know, top five, maybe top three best point guards in the league when all is said and done. One, almost kind of talking like with Ant, you know, you take your team to two Eastern Conference Finals straight, especially with how we know the NBA moves so many pieces around and you have to kind of build the culture and consistency with new guys every season. And he's done that and he's got his team to the NBA Finals. Watch out, this kid's coming. All right, Chris, that was fun. We always do, or we will always try and do the outlet point guard, even if it's in some kind of different, similar, you know, style. And I think it was perfect because we wanted to do a deep dive on the 2025 NBA Finals. This or that, we'll probably do it again in the future. But now it's time for Reddit Reacts, my favorite part of the show, Chris. What do you got for us tonight?
Oh, Mike, I got some good ones for you. But I also just added a late entrant into the mix. It is topical. It's what we started with at the beginning of the show. Let me see if I can find it here. Here we go. Mike, Bovada has odds for the Knicks' next coach. What stands out to you at first glance?
Oh, God. One of the top two finalists, Johnny Bryant, is the lowest odds?
Uh-oh. Does Bovada know something we don't?
It sounds like it, unfortunately. It's funny to see that Mike Budenholzer is on this list already. I feel like Mike Budenholzer isn't going to want to be jumping back into coaching anytime soon.
Yeah.
And then you're putting Mike D'Antoni back on the list too. Man, it's as we move, oh my God, I just saw Stephen A. Smith is on this list as well. But, you know, as we move forward in time, obviously Father Time is undefeated. It's crazy to start seeing these, like, you know, ex players when I was a kid on these lists, Jerry Stackhouse, Sam Cassell, Patrick Ewing, you know, all of these guys are older now. And some of them have been coaching for years and years now at this point, Sam Cassell specifically. But I wonder, Chris, this is the other thing that speaks out to me. I don't think it's going to happen, but who's going to be the first team to hire the first female head coach, man? I wonder that when that will come, because I think Becky Hammon has a great track record with what she did with the San Antonio Spurs, I believe, right? You know, there are some incredible female coaches already as assistant coaches in the NBA. It's only a matter of time. I don't think the New York Knicks would be the first ones to do it, but oh man, does this mean we're getting Jordan Ott, Chris?
I mean, all the writing is on the wall, and I had to double check that this is central and not Centel. It's funny though. I did notice that, you know, right off the bat, that was like the second thing I noticed after seeing Johnny Bryan at the top. The second thing I noticed was Becky Hammon there, and higher odds than Adrian Griffin or Mike Anori even. And Mike Anori was another guy, another name you might, you know, sound familiar, because he was considered by the Suns and down to the list of 14, I think. But yeah, Mike, to answer your question, I think it'll probably be sooner than some people think. The way that the women's game is progressing, I mean, the game of basketball just seems to be getting better and better. Better might not be the right word to use, but more competitive. Teams, coaches, players, the kids coming up these days, it's just the game of basketball is constantly being played at a higher level. If you take any high school basketball player today and drop him in the NBA 50 years ago, I think he'd compete, honestly. And maybe not any high school player, maybe let's say any college player, and I think they could compete. Now, that's recency bias, I know, but all that to say is we see what's happening in the women's game with the Caitlin Clarks, the Paige Buckers, the Angel Reese's. Like, these players are bringing the game to a higher level, and we even see it in the college level as well. There's a ton of talented female college players as well. So Becky Hammon would probably be one of the first to do it. I don't know what Diana Taurasi's appetite is for coaching. I think she might be leaning more towards the commentary side of things, but I think, you know, as the game progresses, it's going to be more of a possibility. The other thing that I wanted to touch on that you kind of mentioned, I didn't expect to go so far on this, but you're right. Sam Cassell, Jerry Stackhouse, two guys that we grew up watching play basketball, play against the Suns even, and also played with in video games. I was playing as those guys when they were still in the league in NBA 2K8, 2K9, whatever. Jerry Stackhouse on the Mavericks, Sam Cassell on, I think, probably the Clippers back then. But it's just kind of crazy to think that, you know, the clock keeps ticking and we keep getting older. And so do these guys, and they move on to that next step in their career. And it's not an uncommon career trajectory to go from player to coach. It's probably, pretty common. It's, you know, we've seen it with coaches. Most of the coaches, I think, had probably played at the NBA at some level, but it's interesting seeing the guys at the high level like Jerry Stackhouse and Sam Cassell do it. But yeah, Mike, that made me nervous. Johnny Bryant with the best odds. He does have those Knicks ties. That means we're getting the Michigan State guy, I fear. But
damn you, Chris, damn you.
I know. I wish I didn't see that. But another one I pulled since the stream started. Guys, I normally have these all in advance, but this was topical. This will be real quick. I found it. It's the Haliban and Al-Shadia. Al-Shaida. Like Al-Qaeda, right? Al-Shaida.
Dude, so I don't know. I'm sure you're tapped in online. If you've been seeing all the AI stuff, the VO3s, the crazy looking realistic videos, this is what AI was made for, man. Look at this beautiful Photoshop of Tyrese Halliburton on Osama bin Laden. That's crazy, dude.
That's the better one, honestly.
Or is that Hassan Hussein? Whatever. You gotta love it, man. And then throwing a Somali pirate. Come on. The NBA Twitter just never ceases to amaze me. It's the same like, NBA Reddit, Suns Reddit. And these people are creative. I love it. Keep it going.
Yeah, no, I eat it up, man. I'm a big, I'm starting to sound older and older, but the memes, man, the memes, they get me. I feel like millennials kind of created them, got them out there, and Gen Z is just running, taking it and running with it and making some real, real hilarious content. I love to see it, man. I love to see it. But let's get into some more serious, it can never be that serious with Reddit Reacts, right, Mike? But we do, as always, it wouldn't be Reddit Reacts if we didn't go and check in with our inspiration for this segment, our best friends over at r/Suns, very welcoming community. They would love to hear your opinion on any topic. Just throw your comment in there. It'll get a ton of upvotes. They love it. They are not critical at all. But this user in r/Suns, Judah249, thinks he's going to be sick because it shows from the r/Timberwolves, see you in Minnesota soon, KD, with some prayer hand emojis. And then you got Julius Randle in a Phoenix Suns jersey. It's the Valley jersey that they don't even wear anymore. So there's a lot to unpack here, Mike. I guess I just got to start with the obvious question. How would you feel about some form of a trade that involved KD going to the Timberwolves in exchange for Julius Randle to the Phoenix Suns?
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. First and foremost, the way I was praising AI, let's step it up, man. You got to get him in at least a current uniform. I don't think we've worn this in two years. Chris, this might surprise you. I am literally at the point with this Phoenix Suns team where I am just open to anything. If it means trading KD for Julius Randle, if it means trading Bradley Beal for a bag of peanuts, you know, like that's where I stand in regard to building a team. Because the last two seasons, we've been bamboozled. There was a whole bunch of promise people talked about, well, this is how this person will fit. Okay, we got the point guard in Tyus Jones. Okay, we got the, you know, the added length in guys like Kata Bates Diop, and we add the shooting, you know, and none of it panned out. So it's basically like nothing that I thought was going to work has worked. So why not have an open mind? And you're talking about a guy in Julius Randle who, even going back to his time with the Knicks, is an all-star. Julius Randle is a good, good NBA player. He did not show up in a couple of games in the Western Conference Finals, but it was going to be a tough task for that Minnesota Timberwolves team anyways, because the Oklahoma City Thunder are built to win now and built to win for a few damn years if you truly think about it. I wouldn't mind it, but the thing at the end of the day too is like, what does the contract look like? What's the timeline? Is he here as a patch mark in the middle of a rebuild, or is he supposed to be one of your catalyst guys that's going to get you from absolutely falling flat of expectations this year to going and possibly winning a playoff series next year? Because we have to be realistic. That should be our like high-end expectation for next season. Make the playoffs, win a playoff series. And then if that, we'll call it a success, because we haven't won a playoff series in the past two seasons. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's just a lot of other opportunities the Phoenix Suns have to keep an eye out for in regard to bringing in younger talent, getting draft capital that might be higher, almost closer to, you know, lottery picks, not with the way that the Minnesota Timberwolves are playing. You know, you're talking late 20s right now. You got to get lucky on some of those guys. And with the new front office, how sure of you are you of them getting those kind of late picks right now? So I don't know if you have it within this, Chris, but the one that I've been seeing the most now that the New York Knicks are out is Karl-Anthony Towns. And I think we've talked about it in the past too. If we could get it done, that's the guy I want.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there. I really am kind of sour to some of these other scenarios I've been hearing. I think I'm in the minority here, but I really don't want anyone from the Rockets. No one on that team really, you know, moves the needle for me. And I know KD's only under contract, I think, for next season. And I did look it up real quick. To make this deal work with Julius Randle, and I'm with you, I wouldn't absolutely hate it, but there's a lot of, you know, it depends, what if type questions. Julius Randle has a player option for next year. So I think this would have to be some type of sign and trade. And so you would have to have a certain level of buy-in from Julius Randle, and probably not just for one season. He'd probably end up opting out of the Timberwolves or whatever, however that looks. I think he'd probably sign some type of extension with the Timberwolves of some sort, you know, opt out of his player option, sign, whatever the logistics of that looks like. But if it's 1 year of KD or 1 year of Julius Randle, just keep KD. And I think it would also depend on who else you get back in that package, or what else I should say, because a lot of the talk around this as well is rebuilding our draft capital and getting the Suns back into the first round of the NBA draft. And I think that's where a lot of the intrigue with a potential trade with Houston comes into play, because they do have a lot of, you know, draft picks, and I think they even have our draft picks to some extent. So getting those back is a very interesting prospect. But Mike, you and I aligned as always. I wouldn't hate this if the logistics are right, but I would prefer a player like Kat. You know, at the end of the day, it has to be either a high level player like Kat that's going to mesh well with this team and be here for a long time, not just a good time, or getting some draft capital back and doing a full-fledged, you know, breakdown and rebuild, and hope that you can do it in the next 3 to 5 and not spoil Devin Booker's entire career. I mean, he did make it to the finals, but I know he has higher aspirations than that. So I don't know why this guy thinks he's going to be sick. There's a lot worse situations the Suns could have themselves in trade-wise.
A whole lot worse, that's for sure.
But Mike, it is funny that you mention that possible Knicks trade, because, you know, I think a lot of people are focused right now on moving Kevin Durant, but you kind of touched on it. You could move Brad Beal for a bag of peanuts, but what if you could move him in some type of trade for Kat? And
oh god.
In r/Suns, user SodaG123 posted, "Fear not, New York, your savior is on his way." And I love the Photoshop jersey swaps. It's your boy, Bradley Beal, with his head in a New York Knicks jersey. I love this. I think he looks great in a Knicks jersey. What about you?
Well, especially because they're using a Photoshop picture of him during his time with the Washington Wizards. So he's wearing a blue headband. So it kind of works, right? The pipe dreams are coming afloating, especially when the NBA finals ends and, you know, free agency begins, the NBA draft, all that kind of stuff. The unfortunate situation is Bradley Beal is just not going anywhere, Chris. He is the epitome of an untradeable asset. You can't even call him an asset at this point. We talked about it when he first came here. There was always the worries about the availability and health of Bradley Beal. And what has he shown in his two seasons with the Phoenix Suns? Worse than what we expected. You know, like, what are you going to... He can't even garner first-round picks, Chris, because you have to think of his contract as well. He's going to be making what, $60 million in his player option, which he definitely will opt into because nobody's going to give him anything close to that once that contract runs out. This is why we have fun on Reddit. We get to love the, we get to see these kind of things. There's no way in hell this is happening. Unfortunately, I don't think Bradley Beal is going anywhere unless you do some large package deals or he's part of some kind of three-team trade where they have to get rid of certain salary, you know, levels to match. But still, who wants to take that on for the next, isn't it 3 years or is it just two? I can't remember. The next two. That's still 2 years too much to have Bradley Beal on your team right now.
Yeah, I can't imagine there's any GM or any owner or any team trainer, ball boy, attendant that wants Bradley Beal on their team right now. And maybe that's harsh. They don't want him on their team taking up a third of their cap space. I mean, if you had Bradley Beal for a cool $10 million, I think that's a lot more palatable. And that's what I think makes the trade market even that much tougher. Because even if you do want to kick the tires on Brad Beal, you're going to wait till the Suns either buy him out or stretch and waive him, or that's basically their only two options. Because, man, what team is going to have a third of their cap space eaten up for a guy that's going to give you 45 to 60 games a season? 60 games, I think, is generous. And we knew Bradley Beal had an injury history, and we knew he was damaged goods when we brought him in here, but we were just hoping that he could capture even a fraction of his former glory as a former all-star and leader of the Washington Wizards post John Wall era. And he just has never lived up to anywhere even close to that. I mean, everyone in the city of Phoenix hates Brad Beal. All my homies hate Brad Beal, Mike, and it's not personal. I think he's probably a decent guy, but as a basketball player and a contributing member of the Phoenix Suns, he is dog shit. And I want him gone. And you're right. I could spin my tires. We've talked about Bradley Beal a lot. We're going to talk about him some more, so I'll save it for a later date. But as Tallman says, dreaming is free, and we can only pray, and when we close our eyes at night, see Bradley Beal in a New York Knicks jersey far, far, far away from Phoenix, Arizona.
One thing is for sure. Headless Bradley Beal will never be removed from the shelf in Studio B. So even when his time is done in Phoenix, his disgusting legend will live on, Chris. But right, dreaming is free. We're going to dream.
Yeah, it's part of the Suns' history now. It's part of the story, and it's going to be a part of how we get to this next chapter of the Phoenix Suns, whether that's in 2 years when we can move off of Bradley Beal, or if we're fortunate enough to have Brian Gregory come in and be a superstar GM. And I think that would be a great way for Brian Gregory to win over favor with the Suns fans. If he can find a trade partner for Bradley Beal, even if it's for a vending machine, a bag of potato chips, a second round pick, whatever you can do. If Brian Gregory can find any team to take Bradley Beal, sold. Love Brian Gregory. I'll buy a t-shirt. Are NBA teams allowed to trade with other leagues? Can we send him to like Real Madrid or Maccabi Tel Aviv? Probably not, right?
Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, they just won the Champions League. Yeah, let's do it. I think, you know, a change in industry for Bradley Beal might not hurt.
He could probably ball out overseas, man. I think, you know.
Are you serious, dude? He'd be pulling his hamstring, freaking ankle sprain every two. Well, it might work because he is always getting hurt. So then he can fake the injuries more consistently. But then, unfortunately, he will be injured. So there won't be faking it. So,
yeah, tough proposition for Bradley Beal. But we'll see what happens. Trust and believe we're going to keep you guys tapped in for what's happening with Bradley Beal in Phoenix. But Mike, I think a couple more for you. I don't want to go too much longer. I know we're almost at the 90 minute mark here, but since it's topical, since it's relevant, I had to actually double check this one because I wasn't so sure. I found this in r/NBA memes posted by user boldfish777. He asks, is this a crazy stat or no? And the graphic here shows Anthony Edwards and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and it says, first Western Conference Finals that will be played outside of Texas or California since 1996. Now, when I tell you the Western Conference has 7 of 15 teams in Texas or California, so nearly 50%, that makes it a little less shocking. But still, does that surprise you that it's been that long, like almost 30 years?
That is a little bit shocking, man, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously, we know, you know, the previous dynasty with the Warriors in Golden State. Going back a little bit further before them, you talk about the San Antonio Spurs as well. You know, they made it to the finals, I think, only one other time where they didn't win, against the Miami Heat. But yeah, then Dallas Mavericks went up against the Miami Heat. Dallas Mavericks were in the finals last year. So, I mean, in Texas, you're literally only talking about two teams dominating that, right? With the Spurs and the Mavericks. And the Mavericks have only been to the finals two times. So it's mostly the Spurs. And then California, 96. I mean, Kobe's Lakers won. They won two more. My God, who else? I mean, Kings haven't been there. Clippers haven't been there.
Warriors, so big
Lakers
one.
And Warriors have been the main catalyst. So you're talking about four NBA teams that have somehow been the upper echelon for the past 30 years in some facet. I'm not trying to get tinfoil hat on this one. That is more of a testament to good organizations being run, good front offices, continuing to reload, and obviously having a notoriety to bring in high-profile free agents. That's how you stay relevant for so long. That's what we were hoping to build with the Phoenix Suns after their finals run, and we just didn't get it right. But at the end of the day, dude, this is a crazy stat to think about it. 1996? That's kind of insane, man.
I agree, man. And even taking into effect that there's three Texas teams and what, four California teams, it blows my mind. It really does. And I'll ask you this, Mike, trivia for you now. Do you know what the 1996 Western Conference Finals matchup was?
Oh, man. I think it was, the Conference Finals matchup. It was the Houston Rockets No,
not a Texas or California team. So that
Houston, Texas.
Yeah, Houston. Yeah, Houston's in Texas. It was 1996.
Oh, so it wasn't. Oh,
right, okay. Right. Because this was the last time the Western Conference Finals was played outside.
Oh, yeah. Texas, okay, because Houston won 93-94 and then 94-95. So 95-96 was Seattle, the Supersonics. And they played the Utah Jazz?
That is correct.
My man. Sometimes you just got to break it down and you find the answer. I love it.
Yeah, you know, you were there. I know, I knew. I mean, you weren't there, but you were there as far as your thought process goes. So I appreciate that. That series went seven games. It was George Karl was the coach against the Utah Jazz and Jerry Sloan. And that was like the Stockton Malone era. Crazy. I was a little bit young. I was 3 years old. I don't remember that at all. But interesting that if you think about it, Mike, the Seattle Supersonics in 96 to today in 2025 are technically the Oklahoma City Thunder. So it's like the same. No, it's not the same. I don't know. That stat kind of blew my mind. And a lot of people in the comments that I was reading in there were like, well, it's not that crazy because half the Western Conference is California. It's like, no, it's still crazy. It's still crazy. And then the teams you think about that you kind of named off there, I've been consistent. We even talked about Steve Kerr and the Warriors, Greg Popovich and the Spurs. You can even talk about, why is his name escaping me? The Lakers and the Kobe era. Okay. Phil Jackson. Thank you.
Yeah. Phil, probably the greatest coach in NBA history. Here's the thing, though, Chris. Now I was doing the deduction to get where I was going. Now I'm thinking that stat might be incorrect, okay? Because the 1996 NBA Finals was the Supersonics versus the Bulls. It was the start of the three-peat, right?
Oh, you're right. The Supersonics did win in seven. I thought the Jazz won. No, I'm looking at it now. You're right. The Supersonics did win that one. The Jazz won the next 2 years
in 97 and 98. 97 and 98, they played the Bulls. So there was no Texas or California team that was involved.
We're talking Western finals. Conference Finals, not NBA Finals.
Oh, damn it. I thought we were talking. Yeah. Okay. Throw my thought to the side then.
No, I like where you're going with that. I like where you're going with that. And good thing to challenge there.
I'm dissecting too much. That's what it was.
You're overthinking it, Mike. Keep it simple. But yeah, Mike, I guess it looks like I have one. I'll do one more, and I got two options for you. Actually, no, we'll scrap that one. We'll go with this one because we are Valley Sports Plug, so I want to keep it talking about the Valley as much as possible. And since we're talking about trades, and obviously the big conversation is around moving Kevin Durant and moving Bradley Beal, but there's some people, Mike, that have entertained the idea of moving Devin Booker. This story is going to sound familiar to some who have been around online, but I found this in the subreddit, and I'm sorry, Mom, r/NBA circle jerk. Yep, that's a real subreddit. And it's from user outside abroad 3516. And he says, this is the dumbest fucking trade proposal I've ever seen. And it's a wild trade proposal via ESPN. They suggest that the Mavericks would receive Devin Booker, 2 first-round picks, and a 2029 first-round pick swap in exchange for the Suns getting a 2025 first pick, Klay Thompson, PJ Washington, Najee Marshall, and Caleb Martin. And of course, that 2025 first pick would be Cooper Flagg. Mike, is this that dumb?
So the only way that I see this as that dumb is you trading away 2 first-round picks alongside of this. Because if you're talking about doing this type of trade, this is the start of a rebuild, right? I don't love bringing back Klay Thompson. He is towards the end of his career, and I think he got a little bit too much money from the Dallas Mavericks for a little too long time frame. But if you take him for one season, then you're talking about, I think he has 2 more seasons left, so then he becomes a tradable guy the next season. But, you know, what are you getting out of Klay Thompson at that point? I like PJ Washington. I like Caleb Martin. I think he was a real good guy for that Miami Heat team that went to the NBA Finals. Is he that same level caliber player right now, though? I don't know. And then Najee Marshall is kind of your throw-in as well. But this is the move if you're doing the rebuild. But Chris, take out the 2 first-round picks, Devin Booker, and a 2029 first-round pick swap. Then maybe you get a first-round pick, another first-round pick, and those 4 guys, then you're talking about something that's a little bit more palatable if you're talking about doing a rebuild right now. But the way that this is structured, absolutely dumb as shit. Like, you can't be giving up more trade assets just to get one back, right? And there's a lot of promise for Cooper Flagg. I think he's going to be a good to great NBA player in this league for years to come as well, but for somebody right now who is in the prime of their career in Devin Booker, this is not enough of a haul for this. And the last thing I'll say too is if you're trading Devin Booker, you have to trade Kevin Durant as well. you have to try and trade Bradley Beal too. You got to get everybody out the door.
No, I 100% agree. This would be throwing in the white flag completely, and it'd be a full tear down rebuild. And the way the money works, I think it would be opening up the door to, because obviously if you're moving Devin Booker, you're moving Kevin Durant, even if the return isn't quite what you're expecting. And then you have the financial freedom to waive and stretch Bradley Beal and pay him out over the next 2 or 3 years, whichever you decide. I would just hate for them to move Devin Booker in the prime of his career. It would have to be something where Devin Booker asks for this, and all signs are pointing towards him not wanting to leave the Phoenix Suns, which for my perspective is great. I love that a guy wants to be here. It's very rare in Valley sports that you have a guy like a Devin Booker or a Larry Fitzgerald or a Shane Doan who really wants to stay in Arizona and spend his whole career here. And so for that alone, I don't like it. I agree with you as well. That didn't even stand out to me at first, but having to give up three first round picks and Devin Booker, Cooper Flagg, yes, great promise, but very unproven. You don't know what he's going to be like in the NBA. And, you know, the signs can point towards him being great or generational, but you don't know. I think people are honestly torn between whether Cooper Flagg is going to be an all-star caliber player, a superstar in this league, or if he's just going to be a great role player that is a contributor, but not necessarily rising to the level of superstar. And yeah, Klay Thompson washed. You're not going to keep him around a long time. PJ Thompson's great, but he's a role player. He's not a star player. So I just think my last thought on this is how fucking hilarious it would be to watch Dallas Mavericks fans squirm and do a complete 180 pivot from their, oh, Luka's Booker's father. Oh, we hate crybaby Book. Oh, Book to buying his jersey, loving Devin Booker, saying nothing but good things about him. I just think that would be hilarious, but I don't want to see it, Mike. I don't want to see it.
Chris, if the Phoenix Suns were to trade a Devin Booker to the Dallas Mavericks, I would seriously have to look myself in the eye and think about my fandom as a basketball fan. That's just the truth.
Yeah. And I mean, we here at Valley Sports Plug, we do have some Dallas ties with our Valley Sports Plug contributor, Ben Miller, who's out there living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I'm sure he would be stoked for the arrival of Devin Booker in Dallas. But as we say in Phoenix, dreaming is free. And I think whoever dreamed up this trade proposal can keep that in their dreams, because it's not going to happen, guys. Devin Booker's not going anywhere.
Dream on, Ben. Well, Chris, appreciate it. Another great segment of Reddit Reacts. And I think that brings us to the end of Pass the Outlet episode number 28. Chris, before we leave for the night, do you got anything else you'd like to pass along to the people?
I think the last thing, we didn't really touch on it, but we know that TJ McConnell has Valley ties through his time at the University of Arizona. But breaking news today is that his sister, Megan McConnell, signed with the Phoenix Mercury, and she will be playing with them. So even more of a reason for us to root for the Pacers. I think that's who I'm going to be rooting for when the NBA Finals kick off this Thursday, June 5th. Oh man, this is the end of the basketball season. We're not going to get NBA basketball again until October, I think, after next week. So enjoy it, guys. You know, we're going to talk about it. Tallman and I, of course, are going to do our big D-backs deep dive stream next Tuesday with Mike heading out east, but I'm sure we will definitely work in some time to talk about the new NBA, new Phoenix Suns head coach Jordan Ott and his rollout and maybe his introductory press conference.
Don't put that out in the air. Come on, Chris. Oh man, NBA Finals are upon us. Yeah, this is the moment of the year as a basketball fan, or specifically an NBA fan. You shed a little bit of a tear because you can see the circle of light closing very rapidly. Let's hope for a extended series. Chris, okay, this is our last thing before I do the outro. Who you got? You're rooting for the Pacers. Is that your pick?
Oh, Mike. No, it's not. I think the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to win, man. Come on. They're so good.
It's OKC in six. I think the Pacers are going to have a lot of momentum. They're going to have a bunch of fan backing. They're going to be able to win some games at home. I don't know if they'll be able to go on the road. But then again, you just don't know, because they won the first two games in New York, and you thought with that high profile of energy in the building, there probably wouldn't be a chance for that too. But hoping for seven, still think it's OKC in six. But yeah, a shout out to TJ McConnell's sister as well, man. I'm sure we'll talk about the Mercury as their season goes along, probably next month as well, as they've started pretty solid, Chris. I think 5-2, 5-3 to start this season. No Brittany Griner, no Diana Taurasi. They've turned a new leaf for the Phoenix Mercury. But ladies and gentlemen, this was Pass the Outlet, episode 28. I'm your co-host, Michael Benjamin. That's Chris Pratt. Patrick, we appreciate all y'all. Make sure you follow us at AZ_BSP. Make sure you like this video. Subscribe to Valley Sports Plug on YouTube. And we will catch you guys next month for Pass the Outlet. But keep an eye out for Chris Patrick and VSP Tallman next week. Appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time. Peace.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Ball is life, plain and simple. You know, ask any baller. If you know, you know.
The game has changed, but it's still the same. You want it, go get it.
Shazam!
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line, the shot on Elo.
Ah, the Bulls win! They win it!
Mike, you're honestly telling me that you're top five.
Yeah.
Top five of all time.
No question about it.
Booker, this is for the win. Got it! Wow!
The ruling on the boys made basket.
You know, one thing's for sure. Over at Valley Sports Plug, you're never gonna catch us slipping.
With the first overall pick, the Phoenix Suns select.
3, 2, 1.